This is Action With Podcast, presented by A-Star Financial Solutions UK, supported by New Lakshmi Jewelers and Tap Tap Send, also supported by Nepali Music Festival 2022 and Nepal Authentic Dining. Welcome to another episode of Action With, and today I have a new guest with me. Moya joins me on the podcast. Welcome, Moya.
Welcome, hi.
Wow, you sound awfully quiet.
Quiet?
Yeah.
Because I'm not used to all these contraptions here.
I guess normally I'm so used to hearing you quite loud, and suddenly you're like, ooh. Quiet.
Well, I think I'm used to talking to you normally on a phone or face-to-face, so with the little headset, maybe it's just a bit unusual, but I'll...
Different setting. So yeah. Moya, I know you from a while back. You've got quite a few different roles under you as well, but I wanted to ask you, if you were to introduce yourself to our listeners right now, how would you go about with your introduction?
Let me think. I'm a very strong, independent woman with lots of different facets, maybe. So I have obviously sort of educational attainment, maybe employment-wise. I do a lot of social activities, sort of supporting the Nepalese community. So I think, and obviously I'm a mother of two, so I suppose there's lots of different elements that make up me. So yeah, maybe the mixture of everything, that would be a best introduction. But yeah.
Definitely. I feel like, you know, the first time that I remember seeing you on social media, you were heavily involved with Asian Mahila Association, AMA, and, you know, you and team through big events, organized big events for many other women who are living in and around Rushmore area.
Yep.
Is that something that you're still involved in?
Yes, I am. So I'm the founding chairperson, and it started off sort of a concept, and I'm very much a believer in terms of women empowerment. So I think there isn't enough provision for Nepalese women or women generally, and I think that they need a lot more support and encouragement, and there's lots of different life events that affect them. Mm-hmm. which I think is important for having a separate space to provide that support. Even in the UK, like, we've got, you know, a lot of the Gurkha associations, and there was no provision for the women, so when that was set up, it was quite new, and I feel very passionate about that cause. So I'm still, you know, with the committee. So I'm one of the advisors still for AMA. And in my normal sort of day-to-day world, it's still somewhere that I still, a space that I occupy. So I'm vice president for the Greater Rushmore Nepali community. And I've lived there for quite a long time now. I've just been appointed as trustee as well for the charity. So
congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
More responsibilities.
More work, yeah. But it's good work. So I think that's important. Is I want to make sure that where I put my time, it's somewhere that's beneficial, somewhere that can make a difference. So I think that's also, you know, things that we need to, you know, sort of contribute to.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of the Greater Rushmore Nepali community, I know that there's been quite a lot of work and activities recently that have come out from GRNC as well. What would you say has been like the biggest highlight while you've been part of the community?
I think there's so many different highlights. I think what's been really good, what I've seen which is really good, is part of the purpose of the organisation is this social integration. And, you know, we go to a lot of Nepali events where there are maybe just, there's not much representation, I think. And I think that's a bit of a shame, because, you know, the Nepalese culture, all of the things about it isn't just for Nepalese people to understand, it's for British society to understand, so that they can make that space and everybody can occupy it. So I think that's the best thing that I've seen about it. So we work, like, with the council this morning. I was at Remembrance Day event, which was actually hosted by the garrison commander. So it's quite nice to be able to have a space which, you know, sort of understands the representation, understands the views, and is able to get that sort of social integration, so that they come to our events, they see the community, you know, that we're not sitting in isolation, that it is a space that we open the doors for everybody. I think that's a big part of what I sort of see as being a really big, you know, development, maybe.
That sounds brilliant for the community.
Yeah.
And along with that, I think the other thing that I wanted to kind of mention was, I think the group played an instrumental role in making the statue,
yes,
the statue of the Gurkha soldier, come to life just outside Princess Hall in that square. How did that project come about? And was that like, you know, can you tell us just a bit about it?
So, in short? So the Gurkha Memorial Project team, it sort of started off a concept. It was launched a couple of years back, and it took some time, obviously, through the whole COVID period. And it was all crowdfunded. So it was everybody just dipping into their pocket, putting pledges through.
How much are we talking?
We're talking about 180,000 or so in the end. Wow. And then obviously this statue that, you know, this really amazing statue in the middle of Aldershot and Rushmore. I mean, if people haven't seen it, it's a really good thing to go to see. And you can read the story to hear of the VC, Kulbeer Thapa, and how he was the first awarded VC. And in those days, obviously, there were not Victoria Crosses for Nepalese soldiers, so he was the first one. Mm-hmm. And for his bravery, and that's something that I think, you know, it's important that that story's given a space, and that space actually ended up in Rushmore. And that's been really, it's been really nice to be a part of. But it's a pivotal thing. So we also had a Remembrance Day service yesterday to honour all the Gurkhas that have also passed, you know, because it's a very important part of history that we shouldn't really forget.
Definitely. I think it's very fitting that the statue is found a home in Aldershot, which is, you know, a connection and a place which is so close to so many Gurkha soldiers, for many of whom that's their first memory as well, because of the army camp, not only in Aldershot, but in Church Cookham, I think that's what you call it. So, you know, well done to the community group for kind of spearheading that campaign and continuing to create opportunities for, you know, different pots of people to integrate and live in harmony. The other thing that I wanted to mention was I wanted to kind of tap into your kind of, you know, Monday to Friday career, because you do something which is the other end of, I guess, community building and providing support for community so they can make things better for themselves or other people.
Yeah. So my Monday to Friday, and I think it has stemmed from my community involvement, because I think, you know, you can offer a bit of time as a volunteer and you can set up different groups and you can also participate in them. But I think to make some sort of fundamental change, you have to also almost look at it from a more strategic perspective. That's sounding a bit sort of like technical, but it must be my business background, because I did my master's in business. So once you sort of look at that, you look at it slightly different, you look at it more high level. So you can look at the same problem with loads of different lenses, from the person who uses or needs that support to the person who actually provides it. So I work for the National Lottery Community Fund now in part of the organization, which is for reaching communities. So it's about giving funding to communities to balance the disproportionality, to make sure that communities are obviously being supported well. So it's sort of charities, third sector. And so most recently, we held our first ever engagement event in Nepali language so that we could reach out to, you know, people who maybe haven't had access to our funding, don't understand what the National Lottery is. And by the way, the National Lottery isn't for me to give you money. That's not what the part that I work for. So that is people who buy the tickets, but the money that gets put into goes to public funds. And we're sort of an arm length body and under the Department of Culture, Media and Sport. And so the money gets distributed across different pots of funding, including reaching communities, which is one of them. And so I think the difference is that it's sort of making sure that people follow the processes and understand the situation. So anything above £10,001 and is on a multi-year sort of purpose comes to our section, and anything below goes to somewhere called Awards for All. So it makes sure that the money is spread out sort of evenly. And there's lots of different criteria, obviously.
Yeah.
And I think that's where I, because I've obviously been on the other side where I've had to apply for funding for my own groups. So now it's sort of like looking at it, well, you know, it's nice to be able to give the money to groups that need it and projects that need it. And it's not just the Nepali community, it's for everybody. So it's been very self-fulfilling as a role, I think.
Well, congratulations on delivering the recent community event for, like, you know, focused on, I guess, the Nepali community, on the different Q&As and FAQs that they must have had. I wanted to ask, what were some of the kind of common questions, common threads that were coming through from that session, from that event?
I think one of the good things, or one of the important things I think that came across, so I'd brought across a case study from somebody where we actually fund, so we fund the Folkestone Nepali Community Centre, and I'd brought across the project manager for that. And I think one of the things I think that was really important that you highlighted was that, you know, the lack of confidence in understanding that there is a funding pot, but how they go about it almost becomes more believable when someone else in the community says, well, I've done it and we've got this and this is how you do it. And they opened their doors and they said, you can come to me and ask me if you wanted any help or if you wanted to come and see our community centre. And bearing in mind, in Rushmore, there isn't a community centre like that. It's actually quite nice. I think that was something that was sort of quite eye-opening for the community, because then they can sort of say, oh, you know, it is possible to be done. And I think the understanding as well, just generally, of like, you know, we can apply and, you know, is there any restriction and can we apply for like salaries, you know, if we wanted to. I think it's trying to understand that there are funding pots that might, so if it's not reaching communities, for example, it could be a different funding you know, pot that you're applying to. It doesn't necessarily have to be the National Lottery Community Fund. There could be, you know, it could be the Lloyds Foundation. It could be somewhere else. So there's so many different types of funding available in the UK. And I think that in itself is quite a surprise, you know, trying to not do it, because obviously in the Nepali community, we're really very self-sufficient, aren't we? So we try to manage ourselves to, you know, put money in and, you know, try to help the community ourselves. But there are also other spaces that have got funding that actually, I think, made it quite interesting for people listening that, you know, we had somebody come from the CVS, which is like the local voluntary organisation, and they support volunteers and voluntary organisations. That's their role. And they were talking about other funding streams that they could help them find, you know, like looking for different funds.
And I think must have been music for, you know, a lot of these people, because, you know, sometimes organisations are cash strapped and they are going back to, you know, everyday Nepali people who are, you know, chipping their money in to continue support something, whether it's like, you know, one of these weekend classes or something like that. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you
mean.
Yeah.
I think when we're on the other side of the on the other side of the kind of spectrum, we tend to see it and we tend to see like, oh, this is not, you know, how long can we go on like this for?
Yeah.
And now that you sit on the other side, and having sat on the other side in my kind of, you know, Monday to Friday job as well, it's just like there is so much out there. It's just a case of we need one person or someone in that voluntary organization should just focus on what are all the different pots that we can apply for, we're eligible for, and what do we need to do to make sure that we meet their criteria as well, and that we have our ducks in row in terms of accountability and reporting and so on. I think when we get to that zone, there's, you know, there's so much that we can kind of access.
I think it's such an interesting phase, because I think when you set up a community group, especially because I've set up my own, so it's sort of like looking at that journey, at different parts of that journey. A lot of it is as you go along, you start to develop better understanding, don't you? And I think now the community is getting more established. I think more and more organizations are actually settled in that space. Now they can look at the next venture, which is, you know, becoming a charity. If they're not a charity, maybe, you know, sort of looking at what's available in terms of supporting the communities without having to just struggle or manage.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's an important thing, because there's some amazing sort of community groups that just need maybe a little bit more support. And that's the space that I think they're sort of lacking, maybe that knowledge. Just sharing it is a big thing.
Well, you're hearing from a wonderful person who will be able to provide a bit of support or signpost you to somewhere else.
Yes.
I'll have Moya's links below and maybe some other links as well, especially for anyone who's, you know, who has a volunteer organization going on in the UK, requires some support or information, then I think this is where we can get the conversation rolling. The other thing that I wanted to ask was, you talked about community and how sometimes it takes a while for us to get to a place where we're slightly comfortable. And then once we get there, we start thinking about something else.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask, like, the community that you come from in the UK.
Yeah.
And your relationship and, I guess, like, your background in the UK, because you don't come from a Gurkha background.
No, I don't.
So tell us.
Okay, so I was born in sunny Manchester.
Love it.
Which is up north.
Sunny is the opposite of Manchester. So
sunny for me. Born there. So
anywhere else is great for you if you come from Manchester.
There's nothing wrong with Manchester.
No disrespect to people from Manchester.
So I was born in Manchester, and all my family actually are all based in Manchester, which is very unusual. And so, but my parents are originally from Nepali origin. So I started off life there, and then I graduated. So I have a lot of siblings. I was one of six. In terms of my like Nepali culture, we came at a time when there were no other Nepali people maybe in the UK, mm-hmm. or not as many. So my dad actually came on a chef visa, and he was coming to work in the first ever Nepalese stroke Indian restaurant in Manchester. And so from there, I think it's the journey's been sort of the journey that most people who come to the UK quite new go through. So I think it's not anything different to that in terms of, you know, trying to get settled, trying to find your space. And both my parents were working parents, so my mum also used to go to work. And my mum actually, she didn't speak English at all when she came to the UK. So that was a struggle in itself. So I watched her go through trying to learn English. And I think that also helped me in terms of trying to get, you know, AMA started, was really looking at somebody like my mum. That's the same as most women who come from abroad. If they haven't got the language, they haven't got the education, they haven't got the ability, they don't have that network. I think that's a big part of what makes it difficult to maybe manage or, you know, sort of get by. I actually went to uni. So I was the first one to go to uni in my household. Despite the fact that my dad used to say, no, you need to get married and have kids. Don't worry, that came later. But what I mean is, I think that's a very traditional view. So my parents are quite conservative. So they were sort of that opinion. But I went to uni, and I didn't just go to uni. I went to uni the furthest away as possible. But that was not intentional. That was just by chance. So I ended up in Kingston. And I went to uni there, and then I went back home, and then it was sort of trying to get in, you know, get into a job that I felt that comfortable, because I did business, so I did business admin. And then I sort of started out just trying to find what space I fitted in. And at first I thought it was like HR, maybe I like people, you know, and I think that's what happens with, especially when you graduate or when you start off a job, you just sort of think, let me try this. Let me see if there's something I enjoy, something I like. But I was very shy as a child, which does not sound very normal. I know. And most people who know me be like, well, how is that possible? But I think it's really good how the journey takes you to certain places. And I think those journeys sort of map how you become as a person. So I was extremely shy that I didn't used to pick up, you know, when they used to say, put your hand up if you've got an answer to a question. I used to be the one who'd never have the answer or did not want to put up my hand. Felt very embarrassed all the time. And then later on, what happened, my parents opened a restaurant. So after they had done all this, you know, they'd been chefs somewhere else and worked somewhere else, they decided to open their own. And then obviously all the family members are roped in, and they go into the restaurant, they're all working, they also work really. And so then my parents used to be like, you need to go and take the orders. And you think you're talking to strangers, not just people in your class that you don't want to talk in front of, but absolute strangers that you have to go and talk to, take their order and say, you know, can you just tell me? And I think, and then obviously then you were meeting so many different types of people. So you're meeting, like, sometimes it's a doctor, sometimes it's somebody who's just, you know, a barman. And you've got such a variety of different people with lots of different stories. Mm-hmm. And I think that also helps to get your confidence going. And then you have regular customers, you feel comfortable speaking to people. And I think that, you know, that whole transfer from going to, not just going to uni, but going to work there in the restaurant from a very young age, and then going to uni, being very independent, where the Nepalese culture is very much dependency, codependency in your family unit. I think that sort of shaped me sort of quite much, so that it became more like, well, what could I do next? What sort of things can you? They're very supportive as parents for me now to what I choose to do, or, you know, how I choose to take my career. So that's been very good for me.
Well, it's good. That's really good. That sounds really good. I just want to take it back to, how was it living at home as a 14, 15-year-old Moya, growing up, like, you know, UK-born, raised, but parents who are, as you said, pretty conservative, and, you know, they come from their own version of, you know, how to raise a child. And, you know, so, and obviously you're in Manchester and you have so many friends, could be Nepali, could be non-Nepali as well, and they have their own kind of way of living and growing up and different sort of freedom that you might see sometimes.
So I think that, so I didn't have many friends in that point because I think I was just very comfort zoned with a certain, I only had two very special close friends and they were also by approval by my parents.
Wow.
Which is like sort of, they were like teachers' children, so it was okay. You could speak to them, they would be okay. But you do have friends, but you don't have friends that are close that your parents quite approve of. So my parents were quite strict, I'd say, but strict in a nice way when I look back on it. So I think that's actually quite good. But in those days, it was more, so it would be Monday to Friday would be going to school, getting an education. And then Saturday and Sunday would be the restaurant. So it'd be, you know, sort of trying to help the restaurant and, you know, and I know it's young age, but then
child labor.
Yeah, I know. But I think everybody does that, don't they? Well, I think there's a lot of people who have done that. Who, I mean, obviously weren't sitting in the bar and serving alcohol because that's illegal. Mm-hmm. But legally, the remits, then you would be supporting the restaurant. I would do small things like do the laundry or something like that. Yeah. But it's not necessary, you know. So that would,
I guess it's blurry because like you're blurry. Living in your house as well, but then there's kind of extensions to, you know, the business as well, right?
And yeah, there is. And it's like it all forms one because if you've got a business, if most people know if they've got a business, then the business is part of the family.
Yeah.
So you automatically have an attachment, a need to try and make that sort of also part of that work. Yeah, yeah, for everybody. So I think at that young age, I saw my parents really struggle when they were working with somebody else. And when you became independent, you are still struggling, you know, you're still setting up a business. It's just as hard, if not harder, because, you know, customers don't come, then you have sleepless nights. If customers come, you've still got sleepless nights because you've got to work very hard. But then, but my parents, when they were in the terms of being conservative, I think they were conservative enough because they used to say, well, you know, Nepali girls don't do this, or, you know, girls aren't allowed to talk to boys, or girls shouldn't do this. And I think they also, because, you know, the restaurant meant that you had to talk to boys. You didn't really have a choice because the customers are boys. So you know what I mean? So I think it also changed their perspective on how life is working, if you see what I mean. But it was very, because there were so many of us as well. I think it's also quite hard when you've got a big family. You know, if you've got, you know, two parents and lots of children, you're already outnumbered because you can't really have your eye on every ball, can you, really, to be fair? But I think that's important as well to sort of, because I look back now, I'm a parent myself, I look back and think, how did they manage with so many children? Like, I've got the two and I think they're a handful. But then, you know, you sort of think, oh, this must be quite difficult. And so I have more appreciation as I've got older.
That's lovely to hear. The other thing that I wanted to ask was the question around kind of identity and the sense of belonging.
Yeah.
Because I guess for someone like you, born and raised in the UK, when you went to, or when you had family visits to Nepal, how did that feel for you? Was that some, you know, did that feel like, you know, this was home, but oddly in a way that it wasn't as well? Or did you never have that as well? And I'm going to link this question up to your own children.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like, and what is it like for them? But I want to hear your view.
I think in Manchester, even now, there aren't very many Nepali people there. So it's not a big Nepali community. So it was quite very much a British, like, sort of culture that I was born in. So we all speak English. So, and maybe kati jana lai chai ma Nepali bolna aundaina jastai bhantale hola tara malai Nepali pani auncha. What I mean is, in that time, it was like, there was no Nepali community. Our community ekdam syano thiyo ani tesma thi chai gara like uncle auntie haru matrai chinthyo tyo bahek ko chai bhanu na like Gorkha army dekhi lera aru kunai ani bhanu na samaj haru jastai thiyena ke. So tesle garda I think malai chai pahila shuru ma chai alikati hami ke bhancha Nepali ma alikati like gora jastai bhayo ni ta haina alikati tyo tesai halko vatavaran ma basta avastha tesai urkyo janmyo pachi ani पछि आई थिङ्क अब हामी नेपाल जाँदाखेरि चाहिँ जहिले पनि अब नेपाल जाँदाखेरि आफ्नै भनौँ न मामादेखि लिएर हजुरबा हजुरआमा सबैजना त्यतै हुन्थ्यो नि त त्यो पो अलिकति कस्तो लाग्ने कि रमाइलो पनि लाग्ने अनि परिवार ओ कत्रो ठुलो परिवार किनभने अब आमापट्टि चाहिँ यस्तो हुन्थ्यो परिवार त्यसमाथि मामाको छोराहरूदेखि लिएर फेरि हाम्रो उतापट्टि सायद फ्यामिलीहरू धेरै भएको कारणले झन् अलिकति भनौँ न त्यो त्यो बाहिरको
कल्चर देखि लिएर आफ्नो संस्कार सबै राम्रो देखाउन पाउने के अब युकेमा देखाउन पाउँथेन नि त जस्तै अब पूजाको लागि पनि अब त्यतिखेर चाहिँ अब त्यो पूजाको सामान किन्नको लागि कहाँबाट किन्यो त्यस्तो पनि थिएन के पहिला जमानामा अनि अब इभल्भ हुँदै गयो अनि पछितिर अब नेपाल जाँदाखेरि चाहिँ अब भनौँ न अब मन्दिर पनि त्यही छ परिवार पनि सबै भेट्न पायो खाना पनि रोजी रोजी न लाइक like if you go to Nepali shops now you can get all the food that you want you know like
yeah.
you can, it's so open there's so much access but in those days you were just like dal bhat tarkari was all you know yeah. there was nothing else and like Nepal goiki then you'd get wai wai and you'd be like wow we can have wai wai you know like small things those small things became like part of oh like when we went to Tracing Nepal I remember one of the girls was saying oh have you never tried choco pie and I'm thinking no I've never tried so I think in a way it sounds really strange yeah. but it's part of what makes you so it's like that I call it like a cultural clash almost because there is that clash because you're in Britain where you've got a lot of you're automatically outnumbered and there's a lot of people who maybe don't understand your culture so you follow that norm because you're young you're getting shaped into the way that the society that you see and then when you go to Nepal and you see that everyone is Nepalese. It's like, you know, there's nowhere else to go but to see and be shaped in that culture. So that's a really good balance to have if you're, you know, I would love to stay like a few years in Nepal. I think it would be so good to be in that space. Like, I call it like my home away from home. Like my physical home is here. But obviously I've got like really strong connections with Nepal, I've got strong connections, not just because of my family, just because I just find that a place that I personally connect with, you know, like in terms of like culturally and my identity and the space that I occupy. But I think that's happened later. I think that never happens when you're young, because I think when you're young, you don't know what you want to do tomorrow, let alone where you come from. I think you don't question those things.
And your place in the world.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think you think about those deep questions. I think you just think, oh yeah, I want to eat chips. That's you know what I mean? So I think that's how it works. Yeah. But when you get older, I think you do occupy a different space. And then you start noticing things that you maybe never questioned before. Like, I call it like conflict between...
What are some questions that you've kind of raised or...
No, you know, like conflict between your personal sort of like you know, trying to manage in your, so like my parents would be very conservative. They'd be saying, you can't do this because Nepali girls don't do this. And you'd be thinking, why? Your question is always why, because I think the education teaches you to ask why. And so it becomes why. And then you're able to balance that judgment. So like, it would be like, they'd say you can't eat beef and you'd go, but why? Because everybody else eats beef. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and at
definitely.
The time in your mind, you're thinking, oh, but I don't eat beef.
Yeah,
but I think at the time, if they don't teach you whys behind the why you don't eat beef, then I think you never quite get to learn properly.
Yeah,
and so I think that forms a problem for a lot of younger generation.
Yeah, no, definitely. I feel like we're told, especially in our culture, in the way that we grow up, we're told this is what you should do, this is what you shouldn't do.
Yeah.
But then, like you said, there's no reasoning provided.
Yeah.
And maybe if there was a reasoning provided and saying this is the point that we're coming from, then maybe some of us will be like, okay, I understand. And then you can kind of form your own kind of decision whether you want to follow it or not.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things like that. Even when I used to go to Nepal, I remember like my auntie used to say, oh, we can't go in the kitchen when you're on your menstrual cycle because it's not good. And then you think, what's not good? Because everybody goes on the menstrual cycle. Isn't that normal? Isn't that a part of life? And you think that's normal. And then because at first I used to think it was like quite segregational, very sexist. Why the men can go in the kitchen? We can't. And then it used to be sold to me like, well, because the women are going to be weak and they won't be able to cook on that day. And I don't know, there's so many things
it's
that...
almost like positioning it as, it's good for you, it's for your kind
yeah,
of
yeah.
well-being.
And I don't think it is. I think it's... And then the other position was, well, because you'll be a bit dirty because you'll be having your menstrual cycle. It's like when you go to the temple and you can't... So I think, you know, there's lots of different rules or systems that we have, but maybe don't necessarily... They're not always right or wrong. They're just... maybe dependent on each individual and what you find fits, sits comfortably in your space.
Yeah. And how do you find, like, you know, as a parent yourself, raising two children up in the UK, but also, you know, the whole kind of, you know, where you currently live, you are in the heart of Nepali community and so on. And how do you find that in terms of how are your children kind of juggling, navigating through that?
Yeah, so I think they also struggle. So I don't pretend that it's not difficult, I think, because all my family, like I said, they're all in Manchester. I'm a single parent now, so I'm divorced. And it's like having a space in the communities and making sure they accept, you know, divorcees as well are still people, you know. And so it's quite good to be able to say, you know, I'm quite open. I want my children to be able to share with me and not to struggle. So I think in the past, maybe, you know, children normally hide things from parents, and, you know, I'm not saying drugs or alcohol, I'm just talking about just small things about, and I'm trying to
feelings,
make it,
yeah, what they're kind of yeah, going through.
And, yeah, I think that's important for them to be able to share with us what they experience as they go along the journey, because, you know, because I think the parenting style maybe in Nepal has been very much like, you do because I say type of thing. It was quite a fear mongering type of space, isn't it? And it's like, you know, these, you know, like they hit children, that's normal. And there is no, like, you know, there's no difference. But I think that's a different system. That's a different culture. That's a different upbringing. And then when in the UK, obviously, there's a different way that they teach you. And I think it's important to identify that there are, like, different ways. And there is no right or wrong. Obviously, hitting children, that's
wrong,
social
yes.
services. But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about just generally. Uh-huh. I'm talking about just the right or wrong in terms of, like, you know, you're trying to parent your best. I don't think there's a single parent I could imagine who is not trying to parent their child the best that they possibly can. It's just trying to understand what's the best that they possibly can. Do you know what I mean? So, like, you know, I used to go on parenting courses because I thought that was really, I mean, I don't even know if people know there are parenting courses, but there are parenting courses. So I think sometimes, you know, when you're not sure, especially I think as a single parent, you don't have another parent to go and say, what do you think of this? Or do you think this is something else? And also I'm outnumbered because I have two. And then so I think that part wise, but I think for them,
at least you don't have six like your parents had.
Yeah,
two,
no, I'm so, I do really, you know, hats off to my mum and dad because one was twins as well. So it was like one set of twins too. But yeah, I think they also struggle, I think, because, you know, so like even with the language, you know, because we speak a lot of English in the house and then they obviously struggle they speak Nepali, but not the same extent. So all their friends, they've got a couple of, like, they've obviously got Nepalese cousins, they speak to each other, but it's just trying to work out what sits well with them as children. So I think they also find it difficult because the next generation is sort of not diluted, but it's sort of changing, isn't it? Like, it's, you can see evolution from when I started out in Rushmore 22 years ago and now, you know, the whole society, the people, the generations, the just everything around the culture has really changed. And I think lots of things become more acceptable, like intercaste. So you see a lot of intercaste, you know, or even sort of outside of the Nepali community. That's all acceptable, and it should be acceptable. Yeah. It is acceptable, but it's just that before it was very unheard of, and you were ousted out of the community, and that was not normal. Whereas, and I think that's what I'm trying to normalize for my children, is there is no right and there's no wrong. It is just what you deem as acceptable, and you make that your space, and you have a circle that appreciates that space that you choose to occupy.
Yeah. So I want to ask, like, I'm always intrigued by your background because someone who was born and raised in Manchester, and life, because of university and various events, you found yourself in the middle of, you know, a Gurkha town, let's say, with all these, like, you know, people with lots of lived experience in Nepal. And now, you know, you're a single parent, navigating that life as well, raising two children up. How do you find that? Because, and you're part of, you engage in so much of Nepali community.
Yeah.
You sit in, as you mentioned, various community groups and stuff. How is that? Because I always think, oh my God, does she not get tired? And plus, you know, sometimes I go to events and you're the only woman in that whole room full of men as well.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dito tapo thakno din. And I'm just like, please just give up. I've told you sometimes, don't just give up. Like, you know, some people aren't going to change.
Yeah.
They're just going to be like talking and nothing comes out. But you're always like, but why doesn't anything come out?
Yeah.
And I'm like, sometimes your willingness to always be like, why gets you to lots of different places.
No, I think, you know what it is? I think it's because I'm optimistic. Because I think that there's a need, like, you have to be really positive. And it's not, like, some people are doing it because they think, oh, I want a name or I want something else. But I'm really doing it with a compassion for what I believe in, which is that community spirit. And I think that's something that, you know, when you're talking about, it's really interesting when you put it like in the terms of me going in Manchester. Like, I would never have thought that I'd end up that journey in a very Nepali focused town or anything like that. And I think that's ended up to become my journey. And it's made me realize quite a lot about myself. So in Manchester, obviously, we didn't speak very much Nepalese. So then that meant that my Nepalese was not very good. And then as time has gone along, obviously, my Nepalese has improved, especially when I started working, it was only the Nepali community, that was all that we had, the majority of our employees were all Nepali. So that meant then your language changes, your understanding then changes because you can communicate better. That means you understand slightly differently. And then you get to see lots of different things that you may have never seen before. So, you know, from like, you know, Dose, even at Dose, there wasn't a mandir, there is a mandir now. Like, they have like celebrations for lots of different religious events, which I think also was missing to bring that sort of community spirit. I think there's lots of different elements that made it like to that point where now when I look where I am now, is I sort of not command that space, but it's so easy to say, well, I'm the only female, and then you can quite get intimidated maybe. But I don't see it like that. I'm seeing it that, you know, everybody has to have like a voice. It's like about equal representation. Why should it be just because? And then historically, there's always been men on all the community groups. If you look at the history of every community group that's set up, you know, when they've got different organizations, there's always been a male. Ours was the first ever Nepalese female organization in the UK. So it made like a pivotal change. And from that point, I noted some of the people in our committee from AMA were asked to then join other committees. And it was like they also got a space. And it's about trying to make it so that there's some fairness and trying to balance. Because I think it's important to maintain the culture. But then it's also important to balance the fact that we are in a, you know, we are in like the UK, and there are lots of democracy and lots of talks about being fair and equal. But then we need to do that in practice as well. So of it's course. Not just, you know,
it needs practice. To start from your own house as well.
It does. Yeah. Yeah, it does. So I think that's important. So even like, you know, I think people get really worried that even with like this divorce thing, they are sort of like, well, you know, what will the community say and what will. But I think if you start keep thinking what the community will say, you won't become that change that you want to see, will you? You'll just end up becoming just sort of like shaped into what everybody else would like you to be. But I think life is very short, and, you know, it's about trying to make the choices that are able to make you become the best that you can be. And so that's why it's important to be still occupying those spaces that, you know, you want me to not occupy as many. And maybe some people don't like, and I think some males maybe get intimidated, I don't know, but I don't see it like that. I just see it just me being me. And some people who don't like it, they don't like it, and that's their choice. And I think everybody has choices. And then some people who do, they just sort of, they're quite accepting. And, you know, I get really good messages as well from people who are really positive, that, you know, it's nice to see that you're in that space, that you're, you know, that you're sharing your ideas, because it's important to be able to get everybody's perspective, you know, from the person who doesn't speak very much, the person who speaks a lot.
Yeah. And like, you know, you might not be everyone's cup of tea, but that's fine. Like, you're doing something that you're happy doing.
Yeah.
And along the way, like, you know, the people that might message you and so on, them seeing someone like you doing that might inspire them to do it in their own way as well. Whether it's just speaking up at home or, you know, doing something that they want to do for once. Because not a lot of, like, a lot of people, especially women in our community, women of a certain age in our community, to put it bluntly as well, they're always living for others. Sometimes it's their children, sometimes it's their partners, in many cases, husbands. And I think that's when they see, a lot of the times, you know, you see people who are in their early 20s, mid 20s, now 30s doing it. But then it's almost like, you know, women in their 40s and 50s, their life is for the family kind of stuff, right? But then that is slowly changing. And when people see people their age, that's when things kind of become more apparent that there is a way.
I think it's also because we sort of, not quieting down, but we try to hide the things that maybe are real in the community. So I think when you go to a program, you see everybody happy and you're enjoying a celebration, I think that's one part of the community and that's one part of our culture. But I think there's another side of the community. This is when it's sort of quite, I wouldn't call it the dark side, but I'd call it a really different part of the community that people don't show. And I think that's something also that, you know, because I had to, at the point where I was at AMA, I used to have a lot of like messages about domestic abuse in the household. And like how that's become normalized, you know, so that, you know, if the husband hits the wife or the wife hits the husband or whatever, mm-hmm. that was like, oh, but everybody's husband does that. So that's okay. Well, it's not okay, really, is it? And you don't need to come to the UK to find that out. You just need to be able to say, I've got a problem. But there was never a space so that you could have that problem heard. And so now at the Citizen Advice, they've got like a domestic abuse representative who speaks Nepali, who's there for the community. And it just shows the demand was there, but they just never had a provision. So now more and more people can go. And then I think that's what one of the things is. They've got to create avenues to make it so that lots of people can share their experiences, you know, and be able to then, you know, be able to get that support that they mm-hmm. need, whatever it would be. Because I still get women saying, oh, you know, I'm going through difficulty. I heard about your story. Because my relationship ended up very badly and we ended up in divorce. But really badly in the sense of like, you know, we had police involvement, we had protection notices, we had lots of different elements, which mm-hmm. I just think now when I talk about that story, I mean, I don't talk on this sort of a platform, but most people who know me closely will know that I have had that experience. So I think then people who come to me and they say, I really need help because I'm struggling, I've had this problem, and I understand you've got a problem, you had a problem previously, can you help me or can you advise me? I'm really forthcoming to try to support them as best as I possibly can. But then they're worried about other people knowing. And I think that's the big concern, is that there's a lot of people who maybe don't share their story, who don't get help or support, and they're sort of in that suffering situation because they're worried about the people in the community. How will they treat them and how will they feel and how will they, you know, but I think the community is always, once you shut your door, the community is always outside of that door.
Yeah.
Your door is your place, is your space. I think that's important, that community's got to be able to also accept people just the way they are and whatever's happening in reality. Yeah.
No, definitely. And I think, you know, it takes courage to kind of really put yourself first, especially when you've had to think about so many different things and sometimes, you know, shaped by community and so on. You've done that. So, you know, well done for this new chapter in your life.
Welcome to A-Star, your complete financial solution. The A stands for first class service and the star relates to you, our most important clients. We are a team of whole market advisors with more than 10 years of excellent service. Serving nationwide, we specialized in home mortgages and remortgages, wills and estate planning, residential sales and lettings, property management, real estates, insurances and pensions. For both personal and business financial advices, please feel free to contact us for consultant. We look forward to working with you. A-Star Financial Solution. Making your move memorable.
And huge shout out to our sponsors, A-Star Financial Solutions UK, New Lakshmi Jewelers, Tap Tap Send, Nepal Authentic Dining, and Nepali Music Festival UK 2022.
So I just wanted to tap in on, you know, doing things and putting yourself first, regardless of, you know, what other people think, regardless of like how, where you are in your life. When I received your application for Tracing Nepal back in, I think, 2017, that made me surprised because, you know, historically, we've always had people who are 18 plus, but around their 20s or late 20s.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking, oh my God, like, firstly, you know, I was slightly kind of nervous about bringing someone in with so much lived experience and life experience as well.
Yeah.
But equally, I want to ask you now, like, you know, what was going through your head at that time to, you know, be like, you know what, everyone looks like they're 18 to 25, 26, but screw it, let me apply for this as well.
I think age is no barrier. That's the first thing. So I never actually looked at the 18 to 25 year old, or I didn't even know there was an age limit. I don't even know if I asked you that question, but
there was only an age limit like the first time. And after that, we pretty much just said 18 plus. So it's been very fluid.
Well, to be honest, for me, it was like, I want to discover Nepal. I thought for me, I really want to discover Nepal. I've never really, because I've always gone with my parents or gone with family members. And it's like a really different experience when you go with somebody else. And I think in terms of like, when I looked at it and what you were actually offering, I just thought, oh, this would be a really nice experience for me to go through. And I don't think at the time I thought, how will I fit in? Because normally I tend to try to feel like I fit in most spaces. And I don't always think, I don't feel of myself like, oh, this age, and that means I can't go to this space. And, you know, I run with people who are really younger than me, and they are a lot faster. But even then, for me, it's sort of like, what's age got to do with it? I think it's more to do with the intent of, oh, is that something I'd enjoy? So when I applied, at the point I was trying to think, right, I'd like to see Nepal from a different perspective. I want to see it like with other people, but not with my family who just take me to people's houses or take me to the places they want me to go. I want to see Nepal just very raw. And that's when I applied. And at the time when I applied as well, I think it's sort of like coming out of your comfort zone. So it's like, prior to that, I'd done my MBA, so I'd done my master's. I applied for a scholarship at that point, and I wasn't thinking, oh, you know, I'm gonna have to go study. I was just sort of thinking at the point, this is something I really want to do. And I never really look at it as in a, you know, I'm very positive, very optimistic that when I apply for things, it's something that I really want to apply to myself, you know, something I want to do, not because what will somebody else say or what will somebody else think. Although I got really good comments afterwards, you know, like, oh, I was really surprised, I didn't know that people of that age could go. And I didn't think it was of that age. And, you know, the boinies and me, we had such good fun. In fact, sometimes I felt like I was the child were the adults. And I know you said I could be team leader, but I swear I was just, you know, they taught me so much. And that experience was really like sort of life changing, I think, just trying to go to Nepal. I mean, I know I was telling somebody the other day that I fell over and I nearly died.
I did nearly die.
I swear.
Came back with you. No, not the dhanbari.
I'm talking about mathi book the heritage. And the ashpad by limologic banner mathi launa portino. Mo mathi the khaiwada tonne no.
I don't
know. I thought timle ta malai bachaula jastai haina timi ta afne garera basirathyo.
No, literally, oh my God, it wasn't that dramatic for anyone listening at home. It was literally alikati hilo ma chipleko matra thiyo.
No, there was a big massive buffalo there. No, and I remember I was walking, yeah, and I fell off the edge, like I could have been gone. I wouldn't be able to see you. It's still hasiras. I was like, mere sato goko, no. And even after we did all of that, I was proper stressed that time on. I was so like, and we had only just started the poilo din ki kyo. And I remember afterwards, you were going, right, who wants to go for a hike tomorrow? And I'm thinking, God, I just trying to get over, like, nearly just practically dying. But what I would say is that was a very life-changing experience. I learned so many things about myself because I don't normally go on solo trips. I don't normally go, like, as in, you know, I think you've always been like with your parents, or you've been with your husband, or you've been with your family, or you've been with friends. To go with somebody who you don't know, I knew you, but I didn't know you like I think that's like a big thing. And I think it was all about stepping out of your comfort zone, things that your comfort zone is your house, your space, your family, and just going to somewhere and trying to find something new about yourself as well, and to find out, like, you know, to really sort of find out where your roots are, because I think that's important as well. When you go to Nepal, you can always see different sides of Nepal. Like, asti bhakkar ma Nepal jadaheri, I went to Lumbini, kati pachi haina malai kasto Lumbini herna jana man lagyo thiyo, and I kept saying jansu bhanda bhanda kati barsha bhayo, so like I'm 46 now. I'm not afraid of saying my age, but yeah, even then it doesn't matter. I mean, the thing is, now I feel like, oh, now I've managed to see Lumbini, I feel like, oh, you know, it's like another thing that's gone off my, you know, bucket list or whatever you want to call it, something that I've been able to do. And I think it's those little things that you have to have, not a bucket list, but you have to have things that you aspire, that you that you interest you, that make you. So I'm doing the marathon.
Yeah, congratulations for getting a ballot place at the London Marathon 2023.
Yes.
I think you're the first person I've known or, you know, who's actually told me that they've got a place via the ballot. Because, you know, I was about to, like, you know, stop believing that the ballot system actually works, but clearly it does.
I applied from, like, so I started running, like, years and years ago. Well, maybe when we're talking, like, maybe 8-9 years ago. And when I started running that time, I really hated running. So I was like, God, I'm never going to be able to run. I'm never going to be able to do. And I think when I did it, I was still learning. I was just thinking 5K. Mm-hmm. I didn't know there were things like a marathon or a half marathon, whatever. And slowly, I came to realize, so my actual journey to run the half marathon, so I did the London Half Marathon in 2020. And so it started out with Runderbolts, and I started off doing a 10K, one of their treasure hunt type 10K. Mm-hmm. So that also helped me to then get to my half marathon. And after the half marathon, I thought, oh, I always want to do, you know, I'd really want to try and do something like a full marathon. But I had in the past applied for full marathons thinking, oh, you know, it's a ballot. What can go wrong? Just put your name in. Obviously, I'd be mortified if I had got it at that point. I probably would give up running for life then. But I got it literally this year, and I was really surprised. It came literally on Diwali, like, so that was a really good, like, Lakshmi Puja ko din ma, like, people get gifts. I got that as a gift, and that was my gift to myself. And I was like, oh my God, this is definitely something I want to do. So it's really exciting. Like, it's another challenge. So I think this is the thing. It's like little challenges I'm setting myself. Like, I want to be able to do that. And I think it's nice to have that. So it's exciting. It's also daunting. So I won't pretend, because that's a lot of miles to
it
run.
Is, yeah. It is. It's a huge distance.
It is.
The other thing that I wanted to ask is that, which might help you during the marathon running as well. Like, you mentioned that you're an optimist, you're quite positive about things and giving it a go and finding ways. But on difficult times, times when you feel like, oh my God, I don't think I can do this.
Yeah.
What do you kind of tap into? What's your kind of source of inspiration or things that, you know, kind of get you through that hurdle?
Yeah. I think, do you know, I think that's important to highlight to people, because I think people see, or you tell them the good parts of the stories. And I think sometimes it's important to tell them that there are bad days as well. I think there's not, I mean, I don't think people share it enough, maybe their bad days. And I think that's a good thing to share. So I think when it's quite tough, I think I'd started out meditating. So I started doing Vipassana meditation. And that's actually been really life changing for me. So it's sort of giving yourself space to have that quiet time, and also to, and I think people think it's quite extreme as well sometimes, like go into silent, because I'm so chatty all the time.
Yeah.
How can you possibly do that? Says Lex to me. I'm yet to convert him, but I think it's about trying to find the things that you enjoy that can actually give you that balance. So having time for yourself, I think, like, you know, people go to the gym, some people go to the beautician, some people go to, I think it's about trying to balance that, you know, there is always going to be, like, you're never going to be in that bad state forever. If you think of it that it's engrossing, then it will overwhelm and flood your world. But if you think of it like this is a temporary thing for me, and then tomorrow there'll be better days. I think you have to be optimistic that those better days will come, because it is impermanent. Everything that you experience for a while, like you might have had, like you might have fallen over and you'd be in that pain, but you're not in the pain today, are you? So I think that's what's important, is to be very mindful that those tough times always come, and that you're able to bring in the strength. And it's not for everybody. I think lots of people, you know, you see lots of people who get depression, and you get, I mean, I went through, when I had my first child, I went through a really extreme form of postnatal depression. And at that time I thought, they used to say to me, you'll never be fixed, and you'll always be on medication and all the rest of it. But I was really optimistic that I didn't want to be that casualty, and that I was trying my best. And I think that's the thing, is that you have to be willing to be open that you have got problems, and that there are issues, and everybody has them, and there's nothing wrong with that. And it's about trying to find, okay, so how do I get over that, and how do I get better? How will there be the better version of me the next day? What can I do? And I think that's important. And it's good to be around a circle of people that also give you that positivity, because you don't want to be around people who are constantly putting you down, saying that you're useless as a child or useless as a parent or whatever.
Definitely.
But sometimes I think that's another thing that the community sometimes does.
Mm.
You know, it's like kutta tanni bhanchan da, haina? Personal achievement, celebration, so we can say, oh, you know, I've done X or Y, or I've got to that platform, I've got to that space. So I think that's important to share as well, just to be able to share to people just your positive days, your negative days as well. So there are bad days, but then it's not about bad days, is it? It's just that your life is a long stretch,
yeah.
And there'll be that up and down, like a little roller coaster, won't it? So you just have to remember that those ups and downs will just keep
coming. There'll be a series of moments, positive, negatives,
and
sometimes, you know, one day we'll be looking back at a moment, a negative moment, and then think, what a memory.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm so glad, like, you know, you'd be surprised that that also happened.
Yeah.
I do think that, you know, life, if you live it to the end, then, you know, there are a lot that can happen, and it's just about sticking it out.
Yeah.
But like you said, I think having that conversation with yourself is so important, and to have that conversation, you need to create that time and then to figure out, you know, what it is that will be your vice to get you in that zone of kind of peace, and so you can kind of be in a calm state, especially when things get tough.
Yeah, because I think everyone goes through tough times. I think that's the important thing to recognize, that there are tough times for everyone. So you're not in it alone. Sometimes I think if you see yourself and you see it's just you, then I think that's when you struggle, when you realize it's part of a bigger picture, that everyone's in the same sort of struggle of life, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And I think then it becomes a little bit, not easier, but it becomes more manageable to say, oh, you know, you might be going through something, and maybe I've gone through something, or whatever it may be. That's why I quite like it when some women come to me and they say, oh, you know, I need help with something. I've had this experience, or I don't know what to do. And some of the stories, I used to get quite shocked before. It used to be really surprising. Like, do people really do that? Is that real? And now I think, oh, yeah, it's normal. So I've started to normalize it myself in my mind as well.
Yeah.
Because before it used to be quite distraught. You know, when you're dealing with other people's personal problems, it's quite unbalancing for you, because you want to help everybody.
Of course.
But then you can't. Then it's quite a difficult space to be in. But I've learned to be quite more thick-skinned about those sort of things, just to say, you know, that there are a lot of bad things happening in the world, in our Nepalese culture, in the space that we occupy. But then it's like, you can't fix everything. Like, Rome wasn't built in a day. So we have to do just the bit that you can. And that's
accept that, you know, sometimes that is the most that you can do.
Yeah.
And then it's there for the other person to kind of take away. You know, you can't try to dictate everything or push everyone to do something.
To do something that's not in their comfort space.
Exactly.
I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's important, isn't it? Because you try your best, I think, to try to help people. I think that's what, you know, because I've got quite a helpful nature. I'm sort of trying to help people as much as possible. But then sometimes it's about them also trying to help themselves. And I suppose I'm really privileged because I was born here and I got educated here, and I've got the support of my family are all here. So I feel that that's actually, you know, it's not for everybody, doesn't have that. Like, some people, you know, they've come, all their family are back in Nepal, they don't have any support, and it's a really difficult space to be in. So I do get that there's a need for more to support, you know, people within the UK just generally. Because I know that we always think, oh, we need to send money back to Nepal, and we need to look after people in Nepal. And I think that's important. I think it's important because, you know, Nepal is struggling, and there is, you know, there's a lot of poverty. But then when you look at in the UK, there's issues which are really big, which are big, that haven't really ever been addressed or never really actually been able to, you know, be looked at properly. And I think those spaces still need conversation and someone to invest time and energy and effort to try to make some changes, so that people can, you know, people can share their stories and get the support that they need if they're going through tough times when they need a little bit of help. You know, I think help is, it's okay to say you need a bit of help, I think.
I agree. I think sometimes it's a lot easier to try to fix something somewhere else even though you know that the problem lies here.
Yeah.
And some of us in our households, in communities, I think we operate like that.
Yeah.
You know, we know that the problem is right here, but it's a lot easier just to focus on somewhere else, whether that's like family members or loved ones back in Nepal or something else. And I think, you know, the closer we get to that realization that we must start working from whatever's right here at the core, the easier it will be, because we'll be at our 100%. We'll know how to use our voice and so on as well.
Yeah.
I'll wrap that up. The other thing that I wanted to mention was, obviously, so 2023, you'll be doing your first marathon, right?
Yes.
First marathon. So what else lies for you ahead? Because, you know, you've already shared that you're someone who likes to kind of have these little things to look forward
yeah.
to. And you're someone who it just goes for it. So it's like, is there a dream? Because, you know, I don't think I've ever asked someone in the podcast, like, what's your dream? But I think that's a question that I'd like to ask you. Do you have, like, is there a dream that you have?
Oh my God, that's like a big one, isn't it? Like, no wonder you never asked. I think there's lots of different dreams. They're like mini dreams, maybe.
Uh-huh. That's completely
really
fine.
Like
even
to.
It's like a
yeah.
small-sized dream. Like, share it away. Because
No, I'd really like to spend more time in Nepal. I'd really like to take a really long stretch and just spend it like a year in Nepal. I think I'd enjoy that. I think that would... I know lots of people say, would you enjoy it though? Because, mm-hmm. you know, it's Nepal and there's a lot of congestion and... You know, but then
you'll get used to it.
But then the thing is, I'm not thinking of it like that. I'm thinking of it like a lifetime experience for me. That'd be somewhere uh-huh. that I've never really been able to live. Even though you go on holiday, you spend a bit of time there. It's never really enough, is it? For
yeah,
some
and it's not
reason.
The same as well. You're
yeah,
only
it's not.
Getting the good point, and you're only doing things that you like
yeah,
to do
yeah.
or want to do. But I think if you go for a longer spell, of course, it's coming from a very kind of privileged angle anyway.
Yeah.
But still. 1 year is a good time to get a, you know, all shades and all sides
yeah,
of
it doesn't
a country.
Have to be a privileged space. It mm-hmm. has to just be a space that you choose to sort of like occupy. So like I used to like...
I meant privileged in the sense that, you know, some of us can literally be like, I'm going to go to Nepal for a year. And then after that, we're like, okay, sorry, it's not for me. Gonna go back to the UK.
Yeah.
That's what I meant.
I was thinking, yeah, I'd quite like to try to do it more in remoter areas, like you know, not in the city, because I think the city has always been.
I
like...
mean, you had trouble just walking down a path. So
no, he
I
said
say good luck,
he
good
said
luck to, you.
To go like a cat. Yeah, he said.
Yeah, I said I asked everyone walk like a cat, which means like one like feet.
But what cat
like,
is that?
That?
Which cat is that?
I meant like do a catwalk, you know, because when
but
you're
I
in like
not,
really narrow
he didn't
footpath.
Actually say catwalk. His actual phrase was something like Bilal or something. And I swear, at that time, I was thinking, you know, like for... like I was thinking of... And that's my sort of thing. So this is where communication... This is the difference between him and
language
me.
Barrier.
Anyway, but I was going to say... I the part I liked about that experience wasn't that I fell over and all the rest of it. It was the part that you woke up in the morning and you're there in this open expanse of like, you've got like the whole garden, not even a garden, like it's the garden of life just sitting
feels,
outside.
Yeah.
yeah. I think that's a really nice place. Imagine how serene, how peaceful that is. And then you're here in the UK and everywhere that's like, it's like rushing around, you've got to go to your job. And I suppose you could sit here and do nothing as well, but you won't see the same sort of scenery, you won't see the same sort of people, and
yeah.
everybody in Nepal has more time for some unknown reason,
mm-hmm.
or they make more time, and I think that's nice as well, just to be able to have that sort of time out and
yeah.
just to go. And so I'd like to do that. And I think the other things I'd like to do is I'd just like to see like my children sort of develop as well, because I think that's a dream in itself. I think most parents will have a dream which is associated and attached to their children as well. And so it's not that grandchildren type thing, but I'm talking about just to see how they obviously, you know, are developing, how they
mm-hmm.
create their world and what they choose to do. So I think that's, for me, it's quite an important part of my dream. And then don't we all want to win the lottery?
Here we go, third dream. You're not short of dreams.
You
then,
said
yeah?
mini dreams, though. Don't we all want to win the lottery? No, I think it'd be nice to just do like, I mean, I think obviously after that marathon, I don't imagine I'd want to run an ultra or something like that. I don't see that in my mind. I think it's just I've applied for the ballot so many times, that was like a good thing. But I think I'm sure I'll be looking at, I like traveling, so I'd really like to go traveling more. I think I'd enjoy that as to be like a really part of a bigger dream, you know what I mean, in terms of, so maybe it's more of a travel thing, but I just like the fact that there's this this ability to not sort of sit still and be very static and just do the same thing. So I don't think I'm a repetitive, you know, I could eat dal bhat tarkari every day, but I could do that if I had to. But it'd be quite nice to try, you know, different food sometimes. Do you know what I mean?
Buffet.
Yeah, go
to World Buffet, yeah.
Not World Buffet. Because I'm vegan and then there's hardly anything in those places. But yeah, so I think true. I just keep reinventing that dream. So I don't think dreams ever really stop. I think there isn't like one dream.
They don't stop, but no. you may have realized or observed that we stop asking that question to, you know, to people as they get older. You know, it's all like, it's so common to ask young people, oh, what are their dreams, or you know, what do they want to be when you grow up. But then equally, I can still ask you, what do you want to do, you know, after 10 years? Because, you know, 10 years down the line, you're 56, you can still start something new. You can still learn something new, right?
Well, that's the time when
and in a way, that's what you've shown as well to myself and to other people that you've probably spoken to.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. I think when you just think about this, there's lots of different junctures that societally you think that's where people fit in, and that's where you should ask that question, like, what do you want to do when you grow up? But then when you've grown up, what do you want to do? That question isn't a norm, is it? Mm-hmm. But now when you think about it, you're still growing up doesn't mean that you don't want to do anything. It just means that you want to do something, but you've maybe got a different approach to when you were 10, 15. Do you know what I mean? Exactly. So I think that's the age difference. But now I actually enjoy that. I think that space, it's easier now for you to be able to have those dreams. I think when you were younger, because you're trying to find your space, like, where do you fit in? What's right for you? You know, what's your space? When you're mature, your brain's more developed. Then you're able to say, actually, I have got more dreams because I've read a bit more and there's more things that I want to do.
Yeah, more clarity.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, why you're doing things is more personal to you, because you know who you are.
Yeah.
Rather than in your early kind of 20s, or you know, when you're 19, 20, you sometimes rush to find the answer because you want to get going with life.
I think when you're younger, you're so unsure of your decisions of like, is that what I want to do? I think some people, they say, yeah, I want to be a lawyer maybe, and they start off in life and they're following that path and they put it out in the ether and that's the path they choose to get. Then later on, when you become a lawyer, then you might decide you don't want to be a lawyer anymore and you want to be, I don't know, you want to be a singer. And I think that's when people find it hard, because they're so boxed into this this space. That it's really difficult then for them to come out of the space that they've created for themselves. So, and it was really interesting, because that was one of the books that I was studying when I was doing my MBA. It was about being lean, like lean in startups. So when you start up a business, like, what sort of, you want your business to be able to flex, you know, to go from X to Y very easily. And the only way you can do that is to be able to have that sort of ability to be sort of fluid in what you choose to do. Because it might not be what you end up doing.
Yeah.
So I think you could sort of apply that to your life, really.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so when you're starting off so many of those things, I think in life there's so many things that you sort of start off with and you say, I'm going to do this. Should be a program,
Masters in Life.
No, I mean, I think, you know, at the Masters, they do teach you to reflect. And I think that reflective skill is a really good skill. I think if there's one thing I think everyone should do, is they should take that time to have a reflection on their day, their experiences, their life, and they should look at that, and then they should be able to then learn from that and try to make some sort of, not improvements, but changes, things that can make you a better person. I think that's important, to be very reflective sometimes. So maybe that's over reflection on my
No, I think that totally makes sense. I'm totally with you on that one. Moya, thank you so much for coming on to the podcast, sharing a bit about yourself, how you kind of go through and navigate life as well. Do you have any kind of final words for anyone who's listening to us on this podcast right now?
Let me just think. God, there's so many words. I'm
one of so many words. Don't take too much time.
I think I'll say, you know, the real the real important thing that makes me is I think that positivity is really important. I think that's the biggest thing that I would say to people when, you know, when you're going through really, especially tough times as well. I think it's always important to stay really positive. And I think that's important for the people around you to also be positive. So say they see other people going through a tough time, be it you, you know, you could be a parent seeing your child going through a tough time and you're thinking, you know, my child's never coming out of this, they've got X or Y mm-hmm. issue. And, you know, and there's a lot of things that can engross us as individuals. And, you know, we can sort of go in that river and be sort of taken away. But if you try not to get too overwhelmed and you stay on the stance that, you know, no matter how many tough times come, there'll always be a better day. I think that's a very good thing to take away, maybe for people who really need to, yeah.
Hear it. That is so lovely. Thank you so much for sharing that as well. And on that note, to everyone listening, that was Moya. And I hope you enjoyed listening to her story, and you'll find links to various things down below. If you've enjoyed this podcast, then give it a thumbs up. Thank you so much. Bye. Bye. This was Ekchin with Podcast, presented by A-Star Financial Solutions UK, supported by New Lakshmi Jewelers, Tap Tap Send, Nepal Authentic Dining, Nepali Music Festival UK 2022. Hope you enjoyed the episode.